Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Way of the Dreamer. This is the show where we affirm and celebrate the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination. Things we sometimes diss or ignore, or we say it's just my imagination or it's only a dream, but are sources of tools and practices and everyday magic that can juice and enliven our lives. We have a wonderful guest today. Her name is Nikki Wardwell-Sleaf. She is, by her own account, a professional occultist. How about that? That's a great description. She runs a practice providing magical, psychic, and healing services. She is the founder and high priestess of the Society of Witchcraft and Old Magic and spends her time teaching magic and the ways of gods and spirits to a large and active community of pagan polytheists, all this by her own account. But here's the best bit. Here's the best bit. She says that she makes a practice of engaging the realms of dreaming as the ultimate spiritual classroom. I'm going to say that one more time because it's so very good. She practices engaging the realms of dreaming as the ultimate spiritual classroom. And I happen to know that Nikki is very good at dreaming and getting around in dreams, dream walker, dream traveler, because she studied with me. She's enlivened some of my workshops, and she is a certified teacher of active dreaming, my original blend of shamanism and dream work. Welcome, Nikki.
Oh, wow. What a great and humbling introduction. Thank you, Robert. It's awesome to be here today.
You're so busy as an author, too. I think we first talked when you'd written a provocative and charming book called You Might Be a Witch. And you've got many more coming out now. I've been looking. I haven't seen the whole text. But I've been looking at the graphics and some of the introductory material for your book, The Goddess Seals. I'm going to want to talk to you about some of that, particularly about Hecate, who interests me greatly. You've taken 13 goddesses from different traditions, and you have invented or collated seals, magical seals, of the kind that we've seen in traditional grimoires and books of magic. So actually, let's start, because she is a goddess of gateways and crossroads and the road itself and the places where the road divides. Let's start by talking about Hecate and your personal sense of her and your personal, you know, rituals and interaction with Hecate. Talk to me about her.
Yes, well, she is, of course, a very widely known and revered goddess from both the Greek and Roman pantheons of deities and mythology. Yes, she's one of these goddesses that she rules over numerous areas of magic. So she has devotees looking to her for all sorts of things. And you hear the phrase triple goddess quite a lot with respect to goddess lore. And many people assume when they hear that, that the triple refers to the maiden, mother, crone aspect of a goddess, but that really isn't what that refers to with Hecate. She was portrayed, actually, in a lot of her old sculptures and art as having three faces. Many times they were all the same, so it wasn't necessarily a young face, a motherly face, and an elderly face. It'd be three identical faces, one pointing to the left, one looking ahead, and one to the right. And the reason for this was because she was looked to for protection of the home, of thresholds and entrances, as you mentioned, gateways, and she's a famous goddess of a crossroads, meaning a place where you can move from in multiple directions. So if you picture the door to your home and a goddess of three faces standing in it, her back is to the interior, and she's looking to the left, she's looking to the right, she's looking straight ahead, so she can see everything that would approach it. So, yes, she is an amazing goddess for exploration, for crossing thresholds, for navigating which direction, you know, to go in multiple crossroads situations. And so in my book, The Goddess Seals, I did choose to highlight her and provide magical instruction for helping access her, for finding wisdom, unlocking wisdom, and unlocking ways. And so, yes, that book is just now in the hands of many of its readers. Newly, it has been shipping from Miskatonic Books, and actually in the Goddess Seals, I also have a section on another deity you might be interested in, Robert, who is a little known Norse goddess of dreaming named Niorin. Have you heard of her?
I have not been able to find a lot of what I consider reliable information, but maybe you're going to fill in that gap.
Yes, there isn't much, so that is the challenge.
I mean, it's like two references in, you know, one of the Eddas, something like that. I can't actually, I did some research because the name came up, maybe because of you. I had not heard of her until recently, but then I could find, like, two phrases in old Norse literature, and the rest seems to be dreaming into it, but I'm in favor of dreaming into it. Before we get on to her, let's stay with Hecate, because I consulted, you know, my folders, in my database, my immense database of notes and dream reports and so on. And I found a personal experience of Hecate in the hypnagogic zone. And I'd just like to share a paragraph with you. Is that okay with you?
Oh, yes, please.
So this is personal, you know, mere man, personal, let's say, appreciation of Hecate coming spontaneously. It was 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm flat on my back in bed. I'm rehearsing for a journey I'm going to lead later that day, which does involve ancient Hellenic stuff, but not necessarily Hecate per se. Hecate was not specifically on my mind. I asked to meet the deity who would appear to me at the climax of the mysteries. And she appears. She's scary to begin with. There's something like an immense cobweb that parts, and snakes and a dark bird rush from the eyes of a tall female figure, a dark bird with wings spread, making a wind that I can feel. The female figure seems to have owl eyes and a lined and craggy face, the face of a crone. Then the old woman's face ripples like a muslin curtain. I see her threefold, all three bodies and faces beautiful. The central one facing me is that of a mature woman. The ones on either side look younger. They are conjoined, not stuck together. They are vibrating a constant movement, capable of taking other forms, but content to present themselves in the most lovely shapes for now. I think, wow, is this the reward for the initiate who finds the courage to part the veil and come and go from the underworld at will? Maybe this is the way the ancient sought. And there's a lot more that follows, but that was the primary spontaneous gift. I set an intention. I was going to explore Hellenic mysteries. And then she appears, this threefold goddess, in this absolutely spontaneous way. And you know as well as I do that when things come up not specifically asked for like this, you know in your shivers the truth of the experience. So that was one of my sightings of Hecate. And since then, sometimes in my own life and sometimes in journeys that I lead for others, I will take them to a parting of the ways on the road, to a Hecate gate, where you understand that there are three roads that you can choose from, and you try and look and see where each will lead into your possible future, and you choose accordingly. And that has been a very, very potent and creative assignment for me personally and for those I lead in these journeys of imagination, to look with Hecate's blessing at three ways in life. So, Nikki, when you invoke Hecate, when you invoke her, when you call for her assistance and guidance, what do you do? Do you make offerings? Are there special words that you use? How do you call on her?
Well, of course, there are many ways to do this, but I have written and recommended a special method in the Goddess Seals, which involves using the seal of Hecate that I channeled in sacred space while being in communication with her. And so the image that is in the book and also on the cover of the book, there's instructions and all kinds of teachings in there, of course, but the image is meant to serve as sort of a bat signal or a VIP pass, if you will, flag the attention of Tecate and or any number of her legions of helping spirits that can connect you to her energy and intelligences when you have need of them. There are magical call words that also go with the seal, what you might refer to as sort of the barbarous words of power. They are not meant to be in any particular language so as to be free of emotional attachment, but to also enhance the usage of such a symbol. So one might touch the symbol and activate these words as a mantra while opening space in the mind to have an open place of communication with Hecate. So with that particular symbol, known as a seal, because it is preconceived and pre-consecrated and then therefore ready for anyone's use, with that seal, you could then have communication straight up with her in whatever form you need. But also it has a secondary magical use, which is specifically for unlocking wisdom and unlocking ways per the types of energies that she provides. So then, of course, you know, in my writings, there's all kinds of other suggestions for doing this in a constructed ritual magical space. Or you can do different things, like you can draw or print the seal and put it underneath the pillow, for example, if you wanted to invite that energy into the dreaming per your dream intention at sleep time. There's all kinds of things you can do in this manner. So this is sort of some of the magic that I have set up along
I wish we could show the seal. People will have to go and seek you out online to see it. Was the seal partly inspired by the description of the Wheel of Hecate, that's sometimes called in the Chaldean Oracles, which were, I think it's in Greek called the Iges, or a funny word like that? Was that part of the inspiration?
It really wasn't, although I have worked with that symbol myself. I sat with open communication with her in a ritual space and simply allowed the imagery to come. And then, you know, when I do that, I sort of make sure it then is approved by the intelligence. So I try to make sense of what's coming through and sketch it and then polish it up later, of course, so that it's something that is visually recognizable to the other magical users that may choose to access it or who come across it. Yes, I'm familiar with the wheel that you speak of, which is a more modern invention, apparently, and not in the older historical information with respect to Hecate. But yes, that is another thing that is now associated with her grave.
One of the things that fascinates me in your work is the role of creative imagination in giving form to transpersonal powers and intelligences. I mean, in the interaction between humans, gods, spirits, and others, as far back as we can trace, we see this interplay, don't we? Dion Fortune, I'm going to paraphrase, I don't have every word straight, but Dion Fortune said, the gods as we see them are the product of human imagination, but it's not only imagination. So there is this interplay between how our imagination works, and also the question of what we are able to perceive and receive, and the form that the greater powers take. And, you know, when you create a seal for Hecate, seeking blessing and approval, I see a creative imagineer at work. My mind goes to a different culture completely for a moment. It goes to Native American culture. There was a great storyteller of the Swampy Cree called Lewis Bird. And one of the stories he told is about the creation of the Thunderbirds. I mean, major figures in Native American iconography in the region of the Great Lakes. I mean, they're all over the place. Where did these Thunderbirds come from? He said, well, back in the old days, humans were terrified by lightning storms, thunderstorms. They didn't know what was going on. They didn't have an explanation. So the shamans dreamed the Thunderbirds into existence. Still terrifying forms, but forms that humans could see, perceive, and even negotiate with. And I thought as I read that, I mean, maybe a similar process has gone on in relation to other forms. I mean, Native Americans in North America don't have gods, as we call them, gods in Europe or other parts, or Asia for that matter, but they have nature spirits, they have animal powers and so on, but it's hard to recognize something that would equate to Hecate or to Persephone or to Inanna or to the other beings. But this interplay between our imagination and the forms of the greater powers is very interesting. And you've done a lot of this kind of work, so you've thought about this too.
Oh, yes, quite a lot. In fact, the way that I function magically is primarily of quite a shamanic nature or style, which is then no surprise why I had been drawn to your methods of dream work as well, because it invites that open traveling, the co-creation, the exploration, you know, into non-ordinary reality. And it isn't just in sacred space, awake in ritual, that I do this with the spirits either, but I've done a lot of it through the dreaming itself. I constantly set dream intentions and document what comes of them, especially with the deities, especially with any important spirits or allies that I feel I am co-creating something with. And those types of dreams have been both spontaneous night dreams as well as many of the 100% lucid variety. And so it's been really such a pleasure and a huge honor in my life to be able to do this and to really walk and travel through those realms so freely and confidently. I do owe a lot of my confidence in that to you as well, and what was built through all of those various trainings.
Well, you're a natural dreamer. You're very good at it. You're a dream tracker. You're a dream walker. You can shift consciousness at will, which Dion Fortune said is the essence of magic, the ability to shift consciousness at will. She was right about that. And you have another book in the works, which I have not seen. I've just seen the title, but it has a kind of title that appeals to the eccentric independent scholar in me. The title is Arcana Aeronautica, which would mean Arcana of the Dream Traveler, or literally the Dream Sailor. The naut part originally means sailor, but of course we say astronaut. Now, why not an aeronaut? An aeronaut is a dream traveler, which you certainly are. Tell us a little bit about this book, or what it springs from, what kinds of experience, what kinds of insights it embodies.
In my mention of lucid dreaming, or the full on state of being completely awake to the nature of physical reality at the same time while being in the dream reality. I've been able to purposely cultivate lucid dreaming hundreds and maybe thousands of times at this point, and I've documented all of them. And because of my passion as a witch and an occultist, I have utilized that lucid space to conduct innumerable experiments of magic, of spirit summonings, of all different types of things, shape-shifting, time travel. And you can practice things like ritual skills in the lucid space and see how the energies would play out when not limited by the denser physics, of our reality here. So the book itself, there's lots of books out there on lucid dreaming as a general topic. But what I found is that there are no excellent books on magic conducted within the lucid space. So basically, Arcana Aeronautica, which its deadline just passed, and I had turned my manuscript is in, so right now I'm just waiting. It'll be out this time next year with Llewellyn. This book, it basically has two main sections to it. The first is in-depth descriptions of all kinds of ways that you can utilize that valuable space of dreaming for actually practicing magic. And I outline what all the benefits of various types of experiments are that bring skill, that bring energy back to this reality. So it is such a classroom, you know, that lucid space. And the second half of the book is, you know, for the magicians and occultists who wish to use their waking magical skills to continue to try to predispose themselves more greatly to becoming lucid so that they can do some of this and have some of these immensely transformative magical experiences in that space. And one of the themes that kind of flows through the book in general is that I look at the ability to become fully lucid in one's dreams as the elusive philosopher's stone of the ancient alchemists. I believe that this is one of those ingredients that when you finally find it, it allows that transmutation of the understanding of the physical, dense self all the way through to yourself as a growing, evolving spirit at a very high level. And so
We're going to have to take a little break, Nikki. But our wonderful guest is Nikki Wardwell-Sleeth. We'll get a website or a way of contacting her. When we're back after the break, you're enjoying magic more than ever on Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Moss. Back after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
Welcome back. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. Our magical guest today is Nikki Wardwell-Sleeth. How do people find you online, Nikki?
Well, I have a website that is societyofwitchcraft.com. That site has basic contact information for email and where to hook up with me on Facebook and things like that. People are free to send me emails with questions or things that have to do with any of my offerings. That's really the entry point into all of the other links,
okay.
I would say.
Great. Great. Well, Nikki's proud to call herself a witch and a high priestess. And, of course, when we think over the history of the witch trials and all of that, two of the things that witches were commonly accused of were magical flight, you know, getting around out of the body, which might be more characteristic of dream activity than a physical activity, but might be seen as a real experience. And shapeshifting, you know, taking different animal forms. It's very interesting. I spent a little time once upon a time with the witchcraft trials in Salem, Massachusetts, and it was interesting that people were charged with being witches if they observed someone flying around with or without a broomstick. So the mere capacity, or the capacity, delete mere, to see these things, you know, was considered proof of sorcerers, the practices, and witchy intentions. So, Nikki, probably this is an unnecessary question for most people listening to the show, but tell us, what is a witch? What is your definition of a witch?
Well, you know, the definition of witch has really expanded in recent times. You know, you mentioned Salem, and of course, yes, back then they would define a witch as someone who had gained powers through dark means of making a pact with Satan or something such as along those lines. But nowadays, actually, I look at a witch as anyone who identifies as such because they practice magic. And that can be in so many different forms. Nowadays, there are millions of people around the world who identify as witches because they engage in some sort of magico-spiritual practice where they are empowered to work with different forms of energy and consciousness in their own hands, in their own spiritual practice, and that is a witch. So it is an immensely broad definition at this point, which is actually why I refer to myself as an occultist professionally, because that has a little bit more of a narrowed insinuation of ritual skill, of intense academic study, you know, and of one who specifically seeks and explores the mysteries as their way of being. Because in the definition of a witch, not everyone works with spirits. Not everyone, even who is a witch, believes that spirits are part of their practice. Some witches work solely on an energy model of magic. I am much more broad in the sense of exploring the mysteries, as you know, and exploring all manners of iterations of reality. So I do work with the spirit model of magic quite a lot. I work with both and others as well as the psychological model. But yes, a witch really can be anyone who enjoys engaging in magical practice.
Anyone who thinks they are a witch might be one. Is that what you're telling
exactly.
me? Exactly. Okay. Well, that's clear. You know, I'm very sympathetic to you reviving the term occultist because, of course, as you probably know, I feel on the inner planes I come just straight out of the Western mystery tradition, so I've tended to avoid, you know, organizational affiliations and commitments in this lifetime. And Dionne Fortune has always been, you know, one of my guides, and her books are ones with titles like Sane Occultism. So I'm very sympathetic to this use of what to me is tried and tested language and tried and tested approaches. Let's turn to something you started talking about in the most interesting way between the break, which is dream lucidity, but beyond what people are talking about. When my friends write and publish books on lucid dreaming, you've taken us into deeper areas. You're talking, for example, about learning about magical practice or conducting a circle inside a lucid dream. Actually, some of the better Tibetan authors or Tibetan Buddhism-related authors say something similar. You want to up your game as a meditator, do it in a state of dreaming. You can do it there. And from my point of view, and I'm going to sound a bit Tibetan here, but from my point of view, it's all about developing a continuity of consciousness, by which I mean the ability to monitor yourself, to be aware of what kind of reality you are in and what is possible there, your freedom to exercise choice, or at least to try to exercise choice wherever you are. So whether you are waking, walking down the street, or in that liminal twilight state between sleep and awake, or in a sleep dream, or in a meditation, or in a shamanic journey, or in an altered state and in a ritual circle, you know, maintain consciousness on more than one level and maintain your awareness of the possibility of choice. And don't let yourself just succumb to the idea that, you know, things just have to go on a certain way. For me, all of my life, when I go back through my journals, and I've kept journals off and on since I was a teen and with fierce dedication for the past 35, maybe 40 years now, one of the most creative states has been a state of lucid dreaming. But, of course, I do a lot of this and teach people to do it in shamanic ways with the drumming, with other things to assist the shift of consciousness. But to go back to the main point, for me, one of the absolutely most productive, most psychic, most creative, most magical spaces has been the hypnagogic space. That's the dream researcher's word, the space between sleep and awake. I mean, Tinkerbell said to Peter Pan in the movie Hook, I told the line was written by Carrie Fisher, which would be interesting. The fairy says to Peter when he's sad because his fairy friend is leaving, Look for me in the place between sleep and awake. There I will always love you. There you will find me. For me, this has been true. The greatest spiritual dialogues and tutorials of my life have taken place in that twilight state. Iamblichus, the Neoplatonic philosopher and theurgist who wrote On the Mysteries of the Egyptians and Chaldeans, etc., in the 2nd century, Iamblichus said, the state in the morning when you're between sleep and awake, you're just beginning to stir, is like the God space, the space when the gods and spirits are most likely to call. So how much is this part of your practice? I mean, hanging out, being prepared to travel or receive visitors in that in-between state of hypnagogia?
I do quite a bit there as well, Robert, as I'm sure you're not surprised. And with, you know, my practice of lucid dreaming, I am a huge fan of what has now been popularly referred to as the wake-induced lucid dream method, because in order to do that, which I have done numerous, numerous times, and it is my favorite way, in order to do that, you have to spend a good long time in the hypnagogic state to even get there. So part of the richness is being able to monitor that place. And yes, I mean, the things that come through, you mentioned earlier, you know, sort of the truth chills. You know, the things that come through, you realize in an organic way that you are not creating this alone, you know, that you are having the honor of experiencing things sort of from the raw building blocks of consciousness. And I just think that it's gold.
Yes, yes, well said. Our wonderful guest is Nikki Wardwell Sleeth. Look for her online, High Priestess, Practicing Occultist, Dreamwalker. We'll be back for more after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Knox.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Welcome back. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. Go to my website, mossdreams.com. You'll see I'm launching all sorts of new adventures, mostly online. A new cycle of my training for teachers of active dreaming begins soon. We are just launching a new course for the Shift Network in which we go deep into 12 different world traditions and lineages of dream practice. And we learn about magical flight, and we learn about dream doubles and doppelgangers, and we learn about how to apply gifts from another reality to this one and do better, which is one definition of magic. And we learn how to use our dreams as portals to other places in the multiverse. So have a look, see what's on offer. Nikki has a great deal on offer, and she's generously sharing it with us. And we were just talking about getting lucid and how this can happen spontaneously and go on any night or afternoon or morning in that hypnagogic in-between state. Nikki, I want to share with you something that happened yesterday morning. It's just the start of what could have been a lucid dream adventure because it was interruptus. But I just want to tell it to you as an example of how things might grow in that in-between state, just from my life. So I'm lying on my back in bed in the early morning. It's around dawn time. And I'm not doing anything much. I'm open to what rises and falls. I have no intention. And I see a feather, and I recognize it's the feather of a red-tailed hawk. This feather of a red-tailed hawk actually literally was put me on this path as a dream teacher. But it's not just a feather. It's part of the plumage. I'm looking at the bird, the whole bird. And in my inner vision, I'm looking at the tail, and I'm looking at the wing feathers, and I'm looking at the back, and now I'm looking at the silver white belly feathers. Now I'm looking into the fierce yellow eyes of the hawk, and I feel its invitation. And we start to lift off together, and I'm leaving the body in the bed, and we're flying up, and the ceiling doesn't matter, it's gone. And I'm enjoying the thrilling sensations of catching a thermal, feeling the winds, watching the city and the landscape below me. And at a certain point, not immediately, but at a certain point, instead of being sort of hand-to-hand or hand-to-wing with the hawk, we are one. I'm flying like the hawk, as the hawk. And it's really enjoyable. Then I'll have a moment when I look down and I feel the human vertigo looking down from, I don't know, tens of thousands of feet up. Wait a minute. And then I remind myself, you can't really fall, Robert, if you're flying as a hawk. You know, remember, you've done this before. Don't get nervous. So I carry on. And then there's suddenly a terrible whirring noise. And a helicopter in physical reality is flying across the space on its way to the hospital for a medical emergency or the governor's mansion or something. And no, Robert, don't be pulled out of it. Don't be pulled out. So I'm conscious in more than one level of reality. The helicopter is annoying. No, it'll fade. And then another helicopter, harsher, almost maybe military sounding, appears. And I knocked out and I dropped back into the body in bed. And I'm thinking, this is interruptus, hawk interruptus. Would attract the sympathy and the empathy and the laughter of people. So it's a good story to tell people because it doesn't result in some tremendous epic discovery, unlike a big dream long ago, which began the same way, which brought me to the Lhondiwanong, the ancient Iroquois woman of power, who taught me her ways of dreaming and connected me to a life in the 18th century. Nothing grand like that, nothing big like that, but just a transitional experience arising spontaneously when an animal friend, because I came to know the hawk very well, turns up, issues an invitation, and you start flying. So I suppose back in Salem, Massachusetts, if someone had seen me lifting up and becoming a hawk, they would have been charged with witchcraft for seeing this. I might have been charged as well, but they would have been charged with witchcraft for seeing this kind of thing. I just thought I'd share that story with you.
Oh, yes, it's a great story. It makes me have so many different thoughts. Firstly, I wonder if upon waking there were any helicopter sounds loudly rumbling overhead of your bedroom. You know how that sometimes happens where the reality
combines. Oh, they were
combined.
There. They were there. Nikki, they were there. I was aware that they were there in physical reality. So in this kind of experience, I'm usually aware of the state of my body in the physical reality while doing something else. So they were physical helicopters. I was trying to push them out. Push my awareness away from them, but they were so loud I couldn't. They were there in the physical sky.
And then, you know, if it were my dream, I would start to have compassion for how it must feel for the hawk to encounter a helicopter.
Yes.
Oh, but
my
yes, you're
sky.
Right.
What are you doing in my sky? You're spoiling the environment, noise pollution, everything else.
Right, and a danger to the.
Birds get killed by planes and helicopters all the time.
Yeah.
Get caught up in power lines and so on. Yes, I felt sympathy for the hawk's plight confronted with the man-made machines. But that makes it a good story. Someone once said that unless something goes wrong, you don't have much of a story. Something goes wrong for me and the hawk. But my real reason for telling it was just to give an example of how in that hypnagogic state, hypnopompic would be the technical term since I'm coming. I'm not sleeping anymore. I'm lying in bed, awake, dormant. How things can arise spontaneously and give you the choice. I mean, I chose to raise up. I wasn't thinking, I'm going to do astral projection or go flying or something. I just accepted an invitation which came up spontaneously, as in other phases in this twilight zone, I might be wandering across a bridge and someone looks at me, and the others don't seem to see me, but someone looks at me, we start engaging in eye contact, and then maybe in conversation, and then we're off for an encounter, or I'm just roaming around, different images are coming or going, and I'm moving along a country lane, maybe, as if I'm in Britain or Ireland, and increasing speed, and suddenly it opens out into a whole panorama, and you're off on a lucid dream adventure. So I'm just trying to reinforce, I don't need to do this for you, but I'm trying to reinforce for all our listeners, the idea that entering lucid dreaming can be a lot easier than people make it sound, if you can just succeed in spending more time in this twilight state and develop a state of relaxed attention or attentive relaxation. I don't know why so little, relatively speaking, is taught along these lines, because it's not new information. I mean, the ancients understood it very well.
Right. I agree. I think, people sometimes struggle with what it feels like to stay consciously in a relaxed state, and that can be why practices of meditation are great for enhancing, you know, one's confidence in remaining there, you know, loosely attentive in the hypnagogic, without getting lurched out easily. But yes, it is. It's a wonderful place to stay, and I agree with you. So many lucid experiences, or semi-lucid, or even just creative experiences happen there. Also, a lot of experiences that I would call dreams or partial dreams of the outside, as the outside observer, you know, the witnessing of scenes, which often feels to me like I'm seeing stories that are meaningful to me for some reason. They don't seem accidental. They have that truth connection inherent to them. It is really rich. I have to agree completely.
I'm so glad you brought in the idea of being connected to the witness self, the observer. I mean, in the occultist tradition, this is called conversation with the holy guardian angel and phrases like that. In everyday language, for me, it's about rising to the perspective of a slightly higher self, and perhaps if you're really lucky and you're really on the path, fusing your consciousness with a slightly larger self, slightly higher self, so this just becomes par for the course, becomes everyday practice. What kind of practice? Looking at yourself and sustaining awareness in more than one reality at the same time. So if you're lifting off with the hawk, you're also with the body on the bed. And there's no tear, no rupture between you. You can sustain consciousness in both places. If you're dreaming, you might be capable of operating in two or three or four more dream spaces at the same time, shifting your primary focus from one to another. And, this all grows your ability to perceive and to operate in more than three dimensions plus time. It puts you on the path of becoming a conscious inhabitant of the multidimensional universe, which I am in favor of doing. Though we humans struggle with it, I'm in favor of doing more of it. So, Nikki, where would you like to take the conversation right now? I'm thinking, I'd have to look it up in my journals, but I'm thinking that I dreamed of you a few years ago in a woodland setting which was defended by lots of very tiny but very fierce owls. Do you know a place like that in your imagination or in your life?
Yes. Well, not in physical reality, but I actually have a place in non-ordinary reality that is presided over by this sort of owl goddess spirit, who is not someone known famously in mythology, but who has made herself known to me. And she has legions of little owl spirits in this woodland setting. I'm not surprised you found it.
We have to pause for another break, but we're going to come back to this as soon as the break is over. This is really juicy stuff. Okay, we'll be back to talk about legions of fierce little owls with Vicki Wardwell-Sleep after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Okay, you ready to put on your owl eyes? I just said to Nikki Wardwell-Fleet, my magical guest today, that I remembered dreaming of her in a location that seemed to be important to her, which was a wooded location years ago. And in the dream, the location was defended by legions, masses of tiny, very fierce owls. I mean, they got my respect. I mean, they were uncountable. And Nikki, you say that you have such a place in your imaginal realm.
I do, and I'm so tickled that you found your way there, because in the forthcoming book of mine that we mentioned, Arcana Onironautica, I decided to take a bit of a leap and provide some of this information about this owl goddess whose name is Ulcha, U-L-C-H-A, and this is, like I said, she is not known in mythology, so any reader reading this would, you know, have to understand that it's coming purely from my own gnosis, my own personal spiritual experiences. But she insisted to me that this was important and that I should share it. So I thought, okay, you know, here I am writing about all of these well-known deities of dreaming in the book, and I'm going to add a section about Ulcha and her forest setting filled with owl spirits who are available as dreaming allies for those that wish to call upon them and to learn how to engage them. And they can be quite fierce. They can also be quite friendly. So I'm wondering what you thought of that dream, you know, in the traditional way, sort of your emotion upon waking and what you wondered about it after that.
Well, I often say just so, by which I mean I've been in a dream and it feels absolutely real. I was there. I might recognize that the environment is not a physical environment. It's in some other kind of reality. But my primary feeling is quite often I've been there, I've done that. And that's not dismissive. I'm just saying I'm a traveler. I was there just the way I might have taken a flight to Minneapolis or Paris. I was there. I came back. Oh, interesting that Nikki has this the territorial defense system so well set up on her mountain. I don't recall now. I mean, I think I had feelings of appreciation and vivid curiosity and probably wanted to know at the time, had I seen a place that was really yours? Did you do? I probably wanted to know. See, I'm trying to reconstruct after years. I probably wondered whether you held physical rituals at a site like this. Could well have been a wooded site in Connecticut, for example, or whether it's an imaginal space. I didn't expect that the tiny owls were around like this in physical reality. So I might have had the curiosity of wondering, oh, is this part of Nikki's ritual setup, and have I seen part of the kind of psychic defenses that she constructs? That's probably where I was with it.
Well, let me just add something.
I mean, you've done some of them. And the practice, my practice has grown. I'm now leading some really remarkable group dream travel, destination travel, adventures, expeditions. And we went a week or so ago to a ruined temple of Athena at Priene in what is now Western Turkey, where I had big experiences many years ago and survived a dark passage in my life. I'm talking, you know, more than 10 years ago, because Athena let me owl eyes. I mean, Athena is one of the goddesses who puts on owl eyes, and the owl is, you know, one of her animals, and see it on the coinage and all the rest of it. And we had lots of owl experiences. But when I think back to the dream of Nikki and Nikki's owl's magical place, I didn't put any goddess name on that. I just thought Nikki. This is Nikki. This is Nikki's hill. And these are Nikki's legions of tiny owl defenders.
Well, it makes sense because I, in writing, am bringing these legions to the public. So even though they are technically not my legions, I am sort of leading them into this reality for the sake of others. But as you always say, too, life rhymes. And I do hold rituals in a grove among the trees on my own property. And we do have owls that sometimes are hooting in the woods, especially through the summer and fall months. So there is a ripple of it, you know, into ordinary reality, but I think you certainly found my meeting place with Ulka in non-ordinary reality.
Very cool, very cool. And, of course, this kind of thing reminds us that, you know, there's an internet and then there's an interworld of communication and connection, which comes vibrantly alive through dreaming when people are open to dreaming and able to remember what goes on. Of course, as Nikki and I are both aware, we're living in a time when part of our human malaise is that so many people seem to be bereft of dreams and don't have a practice of dreaming and recording dreams and sharing them in an effective way. We offer that. I mean, the Lightning Dreamwork process, which I invented as part of my School of Active Dreaming, gives us a safe way to talk about all this stuff. But more serious than the fact that the dreamers, people who do dream and understand the dreams might matter, not recording and sharing, is the fact that the dream life seems to be dead in a lot of people, particularly those in power. And when that happens, we are in the deepest trouble, because if you don't dream, you've lost your easiest daily connection with greater powers, sources of wisdom, with the ancestors, and you've lost your connection with conscience, I would say, quite possibly, and the kind of compass of self-correction the dreams can give you. So bringing this back is vitally important. And Nikki, I hope you'll get your publisher to send me Arcana on Aeronautica in good time for us to talk about that when it's coming out.
Yes, it should be out in the year, and maybe I can update you. I am slated to be coming to your psychopomp training in September. So hopefully it will be well along.
This is, for those that, you can go to my website, mousedreams.com, you'll see that I don't lead many in-person workshops anymore, but one of the places where I still do is Irresistible. It's called Mosswood Hollow, and let me tell the story very briefly. Mosswood Hollow, so people will call them up and say, is Robert there? And they'll say, actually, Robert doesn't own the place despite the name. I'd never heard of Mosswood Hollow. It's a magical private retreat center in a red cedar forest in the foothills of the Cascades, 45 minutes east of Seattle. 20 years or so ago, a friend said, Robert, don't just teach at airport hotels around Seattle. We love you here, but why don't you do things at a really good place, think a cross between Hogwarts and Wind in the Willows. So they took me out, and Moss came to Mosswood Hollow. We never heard of each other. Lovely place. And one of the trainings that I do there is my psychopomp training, which is about, you know, shamanic ways of helping people through death, dying, and the afterlife, and particularly shamanic dreaming, active dreaming, is applied to this. And I'm glad that Nikki will be there. Because dreaming, you know, I would argue, well, I don't need to argue, I'd simply say, in line with ancient and indigenous wisdom, dreaming is the best preparation for dying. The unfortunate, to stay occultist for a moment, said that many of the places and people you'll encounter after death will be familiar because you have dreamed them. That's from her book on the afterlife, Initiates. And the Native Americans say that the same thing. The Lakota say the path of the soul after death is the same as the path of the soul in dreams. And, of course, you know, this is at the heart of the dream yoga and the sleep yoga of the Tibetans, too. Nikki, we're running out of TikTok time. Tell us something really good in 30 seconds.
Well, how about this? We can circle back to the beginning of the conversation, and I will say, you know, through dreaming, I've been able to have experiences magically with beings such as Hecate, where she literally has lifted me up, provided energy downloads that have been able to be felt long into the days of waking following the dream. And I encourage people to not have a separation between what they consider magic and what they consider dreaming in their life and their ordinary day-to-day, to let it all be infused together, to really bring it back.
Beautiful. All right, what a good place to pause. We'll be back in a moment to say thank you and dream on. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Knopf.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com, MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
One of my personal definitions of magic is that it is the art of bringing gifts from another world into this one, and Nikki Wardwell-Sleep is one of those who practices that most certainly. Nikki, thank you so much for sharing your passion for dreaming and for high magic on this show. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Oh, thank you so much. What an immense pleasure. It is an honor.
All right, as we go forward, may our doors and gates and paths be open. And may your best dreams come true.